of shearing it there, but I don't want to hit it. I'll totally try. If I can invite you just to try it and see if you're...
It seemed to work. People seemed to appreciate it. For this reason, Dennis Galecki is my name, and there's been a long history of this sort of discussion about investments
on a Monday.
And then last year we gave it a name, The Art of Investing. I was asked to give some direction to it and worked to try to do my best to develop a way in which everybody here shares their insights. It's not about my insights or any one particular person's. And that's the spirit of the Chautauqua, the sense of then sharing week two with people that were week one possibly and week seven.
How about we just take a vote?
That would be fine.
Let's do that. Let's do that because I sure wouldn't want to do it. I asked last time and there seemed to be vote for it.
Is there anybody?
We have a vote on the table
and a motion on the table of sorts, and that's to see is there anybody have a problem with recording this session? I'll be glad to turn it off if that is the case. If not, then this would be uploaded. I would give you a web address that you can go to and everybody would be connected. That was the spirit of it. So, but if anybody doesn't want it, I would be glad to respect that totally. So let's have the vote. Those who would not want it, let's start with that.
Or the other way around.
You call it.
That's fine. I'll suggest we don't do it. In the spirit of open discussion, equal access to information.
Anybody else?
My son would like to be here, but he has to work, and so I think it's a wonderful idea because then he can participate, even though he has to work.
Well, thank you. That was the student. Is that okay, sir? Because I again, don't want you to
call. I'm outvoted, obviously. That's fine.
I'm glad you asked to call the question. Thank you very much for doing so, because I really get a sense of last week's, but I'll ask that, in honor of your question. Now, here's the motion. One of the things that I'll read four things. Let's get us started. Oops. Maybe I will, maybe I won't. These are the four items, and I have these on the website, and I can point you to them for this discussion. Four key topics of discussion for individual investors are, they're simple. One, know thyself and what risk-reward you want. Two, develop a strategy, philosophy, asset allocation, and disciplines to get what you want. Three, see yourself as a lifelong learner and student of the market. And finally, four, decide how to measure success and or failure, often even daily. Those are four parameters, and then I throw those on the tables with maybe an emphasis every week. And the emphasis I wanted to get at this week, we were talking about comfort levels, optimism, hope, fear, the big ones, how the group felt last week. And it was a very optimistic group. That was a week ago. We've had five straight down days in the marketplace. Some of that optimism may be tempered, maybe not. It's obviously not a trading audience. This is about long-term investment. But what I do want to do more specifically this time is address the notion of asset allocation as it relates to risk management. We all want to get rewards, and we all want to deal with risk. And my guess is each one of us deals with that question differently. At the core of this is a respect for the people that come to Chautauqua, that they figured out how to get here. They figured out they want to be here, and so I'm always intrigued to hear what people have to say. What I'd like to do, though, before we begin, is just do a quick round robin. Either give a first name, where you're from, city, state, so we get a sense of who we are in the collective. Give your last name if you want, but the first name is fine. I'm Dennis, Dennis Galecki, Buffalo, here in New York City.
Scott Lawson, Rochester and Chautauqua.
Karen Parnell, I'm the leader in Pennsylvania, Chautauqua.
Jeff Parnell. Tampa, Florida. Go down Fuller.
Down.
Down
inner circle, and we'll get the outer in a second. Go ahead.
Bill Chamberlain, Cleveland.
Who's on base, Pittsburgh?
Alan Emmer, welcome.
Barbara Barrett, Pittsburgh, Virginia.
David Bridgefield, Washington, Ohio.
Kevin Wilson, Pittsburgh.
Lou Pizzani, Buffalo.
Lou. Tim Lackey, Naples, Florida.
Peoples. New York City, first one from New York, I think, today. Ann?
Prudence from Ohio.
Prudence from Ohio. Go ahead, just tell me where we're from.
Okay, Ann from Pennsylvania.
Ann from Pennsylvania and Beth.
Cleveland.
Joyce, Pennsylvania, Cleveland.
Thank you.
Holly, George, Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh.
Ann, both from Cleveland.
Cleveland?
Wayne Whitmore, Huntsville, Alabama.
In Alabama. And?
Frontier, Niagara Falls.
All right. Okay. And who walked in here behind?
I'm still from Buffalo.
All right. Switch seats on me. Okay. Good. And for those of you who came in late, we're recording this, and this will be uploaded to be shared with others all 9 weeks. Now, I'm going to pass around. Give me your email if you want, then I'll connect you with it. Because one of the things I'm doing is, remember years ago we would have a stock contest, and everybody at the end of the season, whoever was here the last week would guess, well, what's their best bet? And I thought, well, that's, what does that do for the people in week two or week one or week three or whatever? So I'm inviting you, if you want to make a stock selection, and I've got to have you be specific, we'll price it as of Friday's close. I don't want to hear it was taken over tomorrow, tonight, and then you think so. But I'll use Friday's close, and then everything will end on the Friday's close before next season starts. Got it? So if you're here at week eight, and every time you're here, you can give me another selection. How's that? I added that little twist. So if you come all 9 weeks, you've got 9 chances. And what do you have to win? I passed it around last time. It's in here someplace. A silver peace tower. I want to offer the group. It's a little incentive. It says something about the times that we have a silver hard coin as a prize for stock ownership. And if this market continues, and maybe whoever's down 22% instead of everybody else being down 82% or something like that, and it's percentage change. It's not dollar amount. It's percentage change. So I'll pass that down. If you know the symbol, ideally put that down. I've started this off. I'm not eligible. I'm not playing this game. I'll just monitor it for everybody. But please, pass it around. Be as legible as you could. And those that want to be on this, email and to see the web address, that's the other way to do it. Then I'll send, connect everybody, let them know what's on. Okay. Now, I... just for air circulation, let's keep that open. Good. All right. So let's start with that idea of discipline and the sense of asset allocation. Many ways to get to what you want. I'd love to hear people telling us. What is asset allocation? Things in the old days were as simple as stocks, bonds, and cash. Well, now it's a little more complicated. So let's hear what people are using as vehicles to get what they're looking for. You figured out you want something, developed a strategy, whether you did it consciously or not, whether you had advisors help you or not, doesn't matter. Describe it. Tell us, share your insights with what, how are you getting to trying to accomplish your goal? And I don't want to point to somebody, but if either LaDonna or Bill would like to start it because you've been involved, get us going. If not, that would be fine. If you've got seats, come on, join us.
I'm looking for someone. Sorry.
Okay.
I typically have a mixture of bonds and stocks. I have a lot of municipal bonds. I'd say that's about 30% of my own holdings. But I think I look for diversification more in the equity market, you know, balancing between high yield equities and growth equities. I sort of look at that as a diversification in itself, just having different types of equities and different different areas. What kind of approach?
So 30% municipal bonds, and then if you had to take other bonds besides munis or net?
Well, one thing I stay away from is bond funds. I think they're about okay. So,
Bill, am I assuming then the rest of the portfolio is 70%? Is equities or is cash any component of that? Or is that
it's 5 to 10%.
5 to 10. So let's add that to the fixed income. So we're saying bonds 30%, 5 to 10 cash, obviously for whatever reasons, emergency or for further investment. And then that would put you at around 60% equities.
Right.
Is that about right? And you tend to stay in that range that doesn't vary too much?
That's about right.
Good. That's a good start. Thank you very much. Who would like to be next? Just to
yes. One thought I had is with me, it's not very necessarily static. The asset allocation, like say between stocks and bonds, that's a classic split. But in the past, I was partly over Fed bonds, and then last year in March, you know, the way things got, high yield bonds just looked so attractive that, you know, it wasn't a huge amount, but I may have put about 10-15% into high yield bonds, whereas I never touched the bonds before. So, you know, it's hard to keep it static because the, you know, the textbook attributes or properties of a particular class of asset don't stay static over time. You know, like even the idea of international diversification, usually now a lot of the international markets only amplify the things that happen here, and you know, there's so many things like that. So I'm a bit opportunistic in terms of that. Mm-hmm.
That's done well for you too, I would assume.
Yeah, that.
If you did it in the last year? If in the last year.
Yeah, I did bonds. I mean, I had 1 year to talk of funds. I bought one closed in high yield bond fund that's up 100%.
That's done well for you. That's done well.
So that's just one.
So the awareness from your standpoint may be new, but I would say just like stocks have a range of perceived safety. Large cap versus small cap versus micro cap. So too would bonds have a range of perceived safety and have potentially different outcomes, obviously, over periods of time. By the way, I was in the investment field, retired from it 12 years ago. I was in for over 30 years. Retired as from Morgan Stanley after they took over Dean Witter that year that they did in 98. Who else has got some asset allocation observations to share with us?
Yeah, I guess I have exposure to asset classes. I trade currencies. I don't do a lot of trading equities.
Is this for trading currency for yourself or for a firm?
For myself.
For yourself.
Yeah. And I also work at a firm that deals around currency trading. So I have exposure to the different asset classes depending on what currency you trade. Some of them are more linked to commodities, like the Canadian dollar and oil, or gold and the Australian dollar.
First name again is
Eric.
Eric. This is our New York City. Let me hold you here. Anybody, I'm just curious, anybody else trade currencies? I would have been surprised if I saw a lot of hands. I know it goes on. So you're dealing with an audience that may or may not know all the terminology, or how that looks even. And I wouldn't mind if you could give us a primer a little bit. Because I'm assuming, again, you're saying the average investor has access to being involved with currencies or not,
yeah.
Or is it only for...
No, because the company serving. I work for is Forex.com, and all of our clients are retail investors. So it's just like if you open like an E-Trade account or whatever, but it would be for currencies. You know, so it's online. It's all done on the internet, so anyone can do that. But with currencies, I mean, we see that the euro has been driving a lot of what's been going on in the stock markets because a lot of it is just the risk sentiment. So, you know, bad things happen in Europe and then there's more risk aversion and people start to get spooked when they're selling stocks. So, that there's a relationship there, you know, between, you know, the euro and the equities markets. There's a relation between Canadian dollars, I mentioned, and oil, because they export a lot of oil, specifically like to the US, or the Australian dollars. The Australian economy is strongly tied to resources.
So let me push you. On your own account, would it be primarily that, or is that a piece of something larger? Or is it that's what you do, and that's your expertise, so you do that 100%?
I do it. That's all I do. but, you know, just in terms of asset allocation,
does it represent 100% of your investments or 10%? That's what I'm more interested in.
Oh, the currency?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all I do.
That's all you do? So yeah. It's 100%?
Yeah, but I mean, I'm mostly in cash, and then like, I have a currency trade.
So that's your two. So, that's yeah. A variation. Who else? Share some information with you for your son or anybody else like that.
Well, the way I think stock is just by
that's a start, but how about the asset allocation? Would stocks be a certain percentage of your portfolio? Do you think those in those terms, in other words, if you get this much, would stocks be this much of it versus the whole, a half, a
yeah,
quarter?
Well, what I did is I just buy things that I like, I was on a bus in San Diego and I saw an advertisement for Qualcomm and I said, oh, I really like that. So.
What was the year? What was the year?
Yeah. I don't know what I mean. I had a lot of money on that.
I've seen late 90s. I've seen late 90s for that bus ride. That's when they would have made a lot of money in the late 90s to buy Qualcomm.
Yeah.
Off of billboard. Did you end up keeping it or just adding for short term period?
No, I kept it.
So you did well, but it's
then. And then the other thing that I like to do just for fun is trips, because it's a wonderful way of teaching your children to save. Save it for yourself.
Say it louder and explain what trips is. Tell trips. Tell what.
Dividend reinvestment plan, and it's really cheap. And if you have $100, and you go to the store and you go, oh, I'm going to buy a new coat. Try to, you know, excited about it, and then put it back, and you take the $150 and send it off to the drip. Instead of buying a new coat, and you get all the fun of buying a coat, and you build your wealth. But I'm kind of not a mainstream investor, like, I'm here to learn, but... So, over the years, if you just keep sending $50 off, or if you get a birthday present, or if your children get a birthday present, I know my son was amazed at how much money he had when he turned 18, just I confiscated all of this.
And put it into that.
Yeah.
And you have to obviously do that with a few individual stocks. Would you want to mention what types of companies you've worked with over the years? Because that's a wonderful long-term investment.
Well, the other piece of it is just to forget you have it and to add it.
But how about names? You
mentioned well, for my son, Becton and Dickinson.
Becton and Dickinson,
and he's 20 now. Exxon. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is just what you can get on CompuServe, because some like Abbott Labs, you can't, they don't have a drip, so you're somewhat limited by what companies have it, but if you just read something in the newspaper and say, oh, that sounds good, you just check CompuServe and see if it's on there. If it is, you get whatever the minimum is, $100 or something, it's kind of like a do-it-yourself.
Nice. All right, so most of it is either in stocks, and that's if you're going to invest, that's where you're in individual stocks. And some mutual funds, equity.
Yeah.
So you would put those together and say, well, this is how much I'm exposed to the market. And that's part of the discipline of just getting us, because we all, often people have scattered investments. And this is like a discipline to help say, well, how exposed am I to this or that? How exposed am I to equities? In any form. And then you can learn to appreciate that and see if that's comfortable. That's really what this is about. Who else? What other types of areas? Yes.
A little bit different than most people here. I've never owned a bond in my life. And actually, I bought my first stock fund in 1952, Incorporated Investors. And today, I'm 5% REITs, 25% real estate, 5% individual stocks, and the rest is all bond funds. Stocks, excuse me. And over the long haul, it's worked out wonderfully for me.
And does that vary much?
No.
Whether the market's going up or down, interest rates going up or down, that's a little concern.
No, I don't care. You know, if I've had it for 25 years, it's fine.
And again, give that overview of what percentage in which fields?
5% would be real. 25% would be real estate.
How is that different than REITs? In actual
people look at it and say, God, you made a ton of money. By the time I take all the real estate taxes, the institute, and everything else, I only made 11% on my money per annum.
Interesting.
And in my real estate, I averaged 17%.
So as good as Chautauqua has been, but when you take all the expenses, you're saying?
Yeah, because the expenses just killed me.
And your first name again is
Scott.
Scott. Scott, and I'm sure others of you do the same thing, you can tell just by listening, keeps track of this stuff so that you have to build in costs. If there's cost to an investment, whatever they are, management fees, transaction fees, taxes if you're rolling a piece of real estate here in Chautauqua or whatever else.
Well, the IRS kind of makes you keep track of it.
But then you do an honest calculation of the
I have spreadsheets that I
11% versus 17 for others.
Yep. I don't do as well in stock, but I certainly don't own any bonds. I consider bonds a bad investment because it isn't what your return on the bond, it's the return on the bond versus inflation. And I view real estate as my primary real estate hedge. I mean, my primary inflation hedge. And that's a big thing, as you know. I remember buying a house that I live in today for $55,000 in Rochester, New York, and it's 3,500 square feet. $55,000 was a lot of money back then. The house is worth a lot more today, but the buying power of $55,000 then and what the house today is worth is basically the same, so I haven't made any money on that at all. Mm-hmm. But I've had a place to live.
But, you know, but the principle is real estate in the short run going forward in this country, at least my view is it is a very poor investment unless you kind of pick, you know, cherry pick some very, this obviously very depressed areas, but I'm not sure an average investor it's a suitable vehicle for an average.
Well, let's find out how many of these folks, show of hands, how many own real estate outside of their primary residence and see that as part of their investment portfolio. Let's not include our homes. So we've got roughly half the group.
Mine is an asterisk, it's in India. I own
I didn't say where, so there's no need for that.
But there is a whole different market because of the demographics and rapid growth, it's growing very fast.
We're going to tap into that sense of what your experience is from India, if we can too, because usually questions come up. Hey, this is a global world we got here, and certainly in the last 10 to 20 years, global investing is now part of that asset allocation. So I was sort of waiting for that to emerge in the discussion, but now we have at least somebody that can help us better understand perhaps how India looks in general. Who else? So let's just keep another few minutes.
I have a question, and then I'll kind of go into what I've been working on. But what did you say the differentiation was between the 11% and the 17%?
The 11% was just a piece of land here in Chicago. The rest of it's all income property.
Okay.
And that's where I get the 17%.
Okay. So you've got no income coming from the land.
I sold it.
Oh, you did sell it.
Yes.
But your calculation was from purchase to sale. I
yep. And that's, yeah. If I put a house on it, it was going to be $35,000 a year in taxes. And I just couldn't justify that.
Okay. Interesting facts.
I kind of created a bucket system.
Let's hear it.
For us, where I'm looking maybe 5 to 10 years down the road where I want to start retirement.
First name, I want to know.
Jay from Cleveland.
Jay from Cleveland has got the bucket system. Yes. I want to hear what this is.
Yeah, I kind of picked it up myself just based on some reading I did and stuff. But, so what I'm looking at for my first 5 years of retirement, I have invested no stocks at all, strictly in bonds, cash, things that I don't have to have any worry whatsoever about. Got a rich paper, that kind of thing. And then based on what I calculate I need to live on for that first 5 years and the interest I'm earning on that, that's pretty much set. After that, I start making
let me cut to the chase of the group thought here. If I were to ask, how many would say they're exposed to equities, individual, mutual funds, in the following percentages? And I'll give you four quartiles. So 0 to 25% right now. I mean today, not yesterday, not a year ago or something. How many are in that 0 to 25% exposed to equities of all sorts? Whether they're in India, whether they're U.S. companies, it doesn't matter. 0 to 25, then I'm going to go 25 to 50.
Is the percentage based on the current value of those assets, right? You're saying, should those percentages be based on the current value of the assets or the value in which you
I would tend to think in terms of what things are worth today and what percentage they represent of today's portfolio. Yeah, what they were yesterday or what they might be tomorrow, that's another. All I can deal with is what's in front of me today and making an honest evaluation of. So 0 to 25%, I saw one hand.
More than
no, I'm still at the 0 to 25. So yours would be 0 to 25 because it's all currency. We said 0 to 25 in that range. All right. So we get a sense, 3-4 people. How about the 25 to 50% range for all equities of your total investment portfolio? And I'm not including your home, again, as real estate as part of your investment. So we've got another 3-5 in that 25 to 50. And then the 50 to 75% quartile, I've got another... Man, almost a quarter of the group, so it's breaking out, and finally 75 to 100% today. Oh, we have some people we're going to hear more from right now. Because last week I asked the question in terms of optimism. But this week I thought I'd come at it slightly different by asking what I just did. So now I have two hands that went up for the 75 to 100%. I would have been there last week. I'm chicken. I reduced that exposure all last week. Tell me why you're optimistic to be 75 to 100% in equity exposure right now. You
didn't want to put words in our mouth. You didn't say you're optimistic.
Well, your actions are speaking volumes. Let's put it that way. And I'm not saying you shouldn't be. This is no, wonderful. You know, tell us what's
wrong with
you.
Know,
what
15-20-ish year horizon retirement.
So length of time.
Yeah, length of time has been the primary motivator. That's why.
Over that period when I really need the money, things look good value right here, so why wouldn't I want to be 75 to 100%?
Not to panic.
And not to panic. Take advantage of the fact that others are. All right. Put down.
Well, I was interested in cash in that 75 to 100 because I have a lot of cash right now.
That you just created for the sake of investing. Is that what you're saying?
Well, no, I have a lot of stops that executed. So I made quite a bit of money where by leaving in the stops, I would have lost quite a bit of money. But I'm kind of immobilized by indecision at this point about what to do. I'd like to maybe get into bonds, but I don't feel I know enough. I don't know much of anything about it.
Let's find out something more. Let's take, is that broke out? How about the use of bonds? Not money market, but actual bonds. Bill said 30% in municipal bonds. If I were to go with the same percentages like that, show of hands, 0 to 25% in any length bonds, anything over money market, anything over short term, let's say over 3 months.
And including funds, right? Including bond funds.
And clean bond funds, just like equities would include equity funds. So now I've got about a quarter are in the 0 to 25% of bonds. Some staggered maturities, can I guess? And I'm just curious, that's bond funds or individual bonds? I'm curious what you find.
My funds are mainly global,
and the high
emerging market, and high yield.
And the high yield, like that. And individually? Oh, you're at the 0 to 25. All right, so I should have been more clear. Zero means...
Yeah.
How about anybody else in that 0 to 25 that really means 0 there? Okay. I'll say 1 to 25. All right, how about the 25 to 50 range? Again, bonds. So we've got bond people here again, 4, 5, 6. And there's about 25 of us. Okay. Individual bond funds?
Index funds.
Index funds?
Bond index.
And index to what? What's a good index that you have found works?
In the bond? Community.
Is there a particular index when you say an index to of the S&P?
Oh, it's like 500. Well, I'm not. It's just several different index firms.
In the bond area.
In the bond area.
Okay, so there's the Lehman, I know, hit the different ones.
Vanguard,
right.
That type.
All right.
The low cost.
So you're not having to pay management. You're not having any extreme if you can. And then I'm curious, is anybody, where you're really starting to say, I'm 50 to 100% bonds, out of the heck with those equity things like that? Anybody in that camp of some sort? Okay, good. Because they serve a purpose, and frankly, if you were, I saved this headline from my local Buffalo News at the end of the year, so this is January 1st of this year. And it really talks about, for stocks, 2009 marked the end of a lost decade. Bond investors, for all the glamour of stocks, bond investors would have been doing pretty nicely for the last decade. Stock investors had one of those bad decades. Lost decade was their title, and it wasn't far from it. A lot of this long-term thinking is that when you look back, 1926 is when they really started to do good record-keeping for most charts go back to 26. After that, it's a little dicier. But so when you make comparisons, usually over any 10-year period, stocks are going to do pretty well. This was one of those 10-year periods that wasn't. And when you think about the period, we had that 98, 99, where somebody could see a billboard for Colicom and do very nicely buying it. I understand that because it was part of that era, that bubble burst, NASDAQ hit over 5,000. We're sitting around 2,000 plus or minus now, and it may be a long time before we get back to that 2,000 bubble, literally. The spring of March, second week of March of 2000, when that bubble broke, biotech first and then information technology in the next week, and it was all over. The current market we're in, you could argue, peaked in October of 2007. That's when the Dow was over 14,000, if you use that as a measurement. Most use S&P 500. But that here we are just under the 10,000. We keep going back and forth over the years now, plus or minus 10,000. So we're a good 30, 40% from that high water mark, and a good 60% from the NASDAQ watermark that goes all the way back to 2000. Now think of that in terms of 1929 and picture a market hitting around 380, as I recall, 370, 380, and then dropping to 90% roughly around 32. And then you had the rally up in the 37, then you had a second leg down, which was terrible, 37, 38, and then rally again, and war comes. And it looked pretty dire. I told people I'm born in that year of 42 and truly a child of hope. I mean, think about it. You have to be when you think of Japan coming at you from one way and Germany coming at you from the other, and you weren't winning too many battles at that point. It would take you a while to get your feet on the ground. And wow. So in that world, the market hit its low in that terrible, terrible time. So I really, as hard as it can be sometimes to be optimistic, I always personally remind myself of my own time period and say, wow, when it's hard, sometimes it turns out to be right there at the bottom, right there at the bottom. So keep that longer term thinking going. All right, other issues. And now, because I want to blend from the bonds, did you hear David Brooks happen to turn market prognosticator? And I think the term he would use is in the context of, watch out, the bond market could turn on a dime, and then what? And I wanted to explore that comment and see what you think about it. First of all, what was he saying? What was he saying to you, and is it relevant, and is it something to look at as something of concern?
Isn't he saying the interest rates will go up, price of it?
And describe how dramatic that might be if you're a bond holder.
Well, it doesn't take much.
Unless you're indexed.
Unless you're indexed, that's
Right. If you're holding bonds, yeah, because the value goes down.
How would an index, and help us all understand that, how would an index keep you from experiencing loss if interest rates went up? What, how would that work and not be just a money market? Excuse me, money market where it's pegged to something. How would it keep you from losing money if interest rates?
I think you still lose some money, but they quickly recover. There's, if you have a very short, like I've got a very short trigger index fund.
Okay.
And I did it deliberately because of the problem of rates being so low now that they're going to go up. And they quickly replace duration. They look at duration.
Okay.
And you get an index.
So you're not, you can't be duration. Too, you can't be too far from a money market fund that might have 90-day returns.
Right.
For
right.
So your yield is in that
fund with short duration.
Your yield
is duration, you get killed.
Right. So your yield has got to be in that 0.1 to 0.2%. I mean, it can't be much more. I mean, we're talking a 10-year treasury is now under 3%. This is the hard part. But do you understand the risk that David Brooks was alluding to? And he sees it as having national consequences, international consequences. I was just curious if you agreed with that.
Well, I do agree. That's why I have a lot of cash, because I do think we're in a real bad time. Maybe I should say we're in a bad time. But you said something that I wanted to pick up on earlier, and if it kind of goes along with that, is you said something about get back to a price. I want to know how to change my mentality to get back to. I don't think that's on the table as a part of the investment decision right now.
Let's put it on the table, because I think you...
No, really, I mean...
No, it's a great point.
It's
a great point.
It shouldn't be a part of our investment strategy to think about getting back to.
No, but I'll move you one step before that, is let's put it this way. Much of investment is about our ego. Much of investment is about our ego. And I find coming to terms with it. So getting back is part of that ego. Well, I paid this much for it. I don't want to take a loss until someday it'll get back, and then that's our ego. The market, the stock doesn't know what you paid for it. The world doesn't much care what you paid for it. The only person that it matters to is you or any of us. That's our ego. So I would like to hear how people address their ego in developing disciplines that they use so that they can deal with themselves. In many ways, that's what you've got to deal with. You don't have to answer to anybody else, usually, but yourself. And somehow measure to see that you're happy with what you're doing, not happy. So I'm curious, how have we in this group, on this second week in 2010 at Chautauqua, how did we come to terms with our ego, our decision-making process? It's a great question. And getting back to even is one component. You could build off of that or not. Any thoughts?
One thing I've done is that over time I buy fewer and fewer individual stocks and buy more and more funds, because I realize that I'm way overestimating my ability to pick stocks when you look at the hard numbers. So with the funds, there's a lot less ego, because it's just by the numbers. It's not like I have this great feeling that this technology or this stock is going to do XYZ. It's just pure numbers. This fund has got this characteristic in the short run, in the long run. This is the kind of manager, that's the style. So it's a very different kind of decision. So then I'm not emotionally wrapped up.
Mm-hmm. So funds have helped you get over that personal ego.
So not as exciting, but it works a lot.
You've been okay. How else? Because I can share some thoughts I have, but I'd like to hear others.
My answer is I never look at things day to day. Because if you look at things day to day, it's going to eat you alive. You should figure your shortest investments a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, the better.
So you bought it, you own it. And, right. You know, and you give it the time to develop in its own way. And what it does is the market's going up or down, or the market wants to overvalue it or undervalue it.
Don't even look at it.
Don't worry about it.
talk to people and say, I made this much money today. Oh, that's the only way they can say that if they sold it today.
But that means
here we go.
Your choices were sound. Or you think that you've done the investigative and research to say this is the best investment I can make of my money at this time, and you don't have to look back at it later on. Sure, you know, mind anyway, that it's going to stand the test of time.
Well, that's why I agree with this gentleman here. I 5% I have in individual stocks. Everything else is in stock firms.
Mm-hmm.
In the stock part of my book.
And you have confidence in those decisions. Yes. Wow. That's a real critical aspect. Mm-hmm.
We're not smart. I don't think anybody's smart. At least those people are a little more cautious because they're looking at it outwardly.
Did you find, though, that part of the logic of a stock fund would be the diversification? Most people aren't going to say, oh, I'm going to own 100 stocks or 150. So therefore, this fund owns it, it's efficient. Did anybody experience in 2008, especially, and frankly, even now, it's starting to appear similar suddenly, that they're safer because of that diversification in a stock fund that broad base is protecting me? It's maybe this isn't working within it, but this is, and therefore it's kind of balances out. Has anybody had any stories of success where, you don't have to name names, but that owning a stock fund was helpful to protect you on the downside, diversification? You did. Anybody else?
Balance funds and things like that.
Want to explain what a balanced fund is? And
part of stocks and part of bonds.
And does that part of the stocks or bonds vary in your experience? Do they come to you and say, you know, we used to be 40% bonds and 60% stock, but now we're 50-50 or we're 60-40 the other way?
It doesn't vary very much.
It doesn't vary much. So the idea is you've got a typical balanced fund, and I must say the first mutual funds go back to those late 20s and 30s, and they were just that. Because if you went to your local trust department, if you were a person of wealth, and set up a trust account at your local bank, they would pretty much argue for their management, which would be typically 60-40. 55, 45 maybe, and it would be a leaning towards the equity side, 60-40 bonds, 40%, maybe 55-45. That's the typical balanced fund. And it's a great way because in theory, in the old days especially, when stocks were going up, bonds would peak there, and then suddenly stocks would go down, and then typically a recession's coming, interest rates would come down, the bond fund part would go up, and you add some cushion in that balanced portfolio. That was the theory behind it. It's still the theory behind it. Yes?
I'll go a different way in the conversation. There's a lot of people that are kind of anti-insurance, but there are also a lot of people talking about annuities, fixed annuities, things of that sort. What would be yours or anybody else's perspective?
Let's show a raise of hands. How many use any form of annuity, a variable or a fixed type of annuity? How many are, where that's a part of your, I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 hands. Okay, and how does that work for you? And what part of your portfolio does that, what are you getting out of that investment? Why do you have that? Who wants to speak to that?
Well, I have it because my husband was an invalid and I had very high costs that I was cannibalizing other assets, and with the financial planner looking at the whole asset picture, decided that one of the annuities would be paid out in a systematic for a short term, well, several years, to cover those expenses. Now, so that'll be exhausted. I mean, he's now gone, but it'll be exhausted. So, but now I'm trying to invest that.
So the annuity is a core part, a central part for your safety, preservation of capital. Is
no,
that the way you see it?
No, not a core part. It's not insignificant.
Okay, it's significant. Okay, all right. Anybody else with the annuities? How does that? And you mentioned interesting a financial planner, somebody assist you. Boy, that's central. You can get somebody that you can work with, that you really have confidence isn't selling you something, truly has got your best interest, reviews it with you, is willing to say, this isn't working as well as I thought this might be, that's a great thing to strive for. If you don't have that, and you would like it, keep looking, is all I can tell you. Ask people that they have that, who it is, because it might be, it's like anything, it's a journey of sorts, and it's nice to go with somebody that might be a good guide. Not everyone is a good guy. Yes?
I'll be very unpopular, with all due respect to you, man. I think they're terrible.
Explain your reason.
The fees are outrageous. They're 7 to 8%. I mean, it's probably one of the worst investments you can get into. And not only that, you're totally illiquid. If you have to get up within the next 7 or 8 years, you've got a 1% per year surrender fee. And that's to pay back the money. You put $100,000 in, that guy's going to get $7,000 or $8,000. And so you're illiquid, you're tied in, you're expensive, and they're nothing more than insurance company putting money out in the stock market anyways. And you don't know how good they're going to do. I think they ought to be avoided like the plague.
And they're double taxed.
Insurance, too. Same thing. Big fees.
Anybody else? I see some smiles. Anybody else have a similar. And well, people that aren't subtle. I like sometimes just this is how it is type of answer. Go ahead.
Well, I think they're really terrible because they were sold to old people, and then when you die, it's used to gross estate if you live in a state that has estate taxes, and then if your beneficiaries are high earning people, it's a good tax for them with their tax rate. So
we're going to call this little discussion to a close, and the purpose of it, the purpose only because I've got four on the nose and the library closes at four, and I promised the library we move out. That's the only reason this is abruptly closing. It's not because of the lack of discussion. In fact, show of hands, how many will be here another Monday during the summer? They're not just here for this week, in other words. A good half of us, so please come back. I would love to continue the discussion on annuities. Folks, enjoy your stay at Chautauqua.
I'm really impressed with that. part of
the letter. He didn't forget he's recorded. No, he's
not. Where he's still recording.
A couple of houses from Master. So.
Okay.
Very nice to meet you, Scott.
Oh, so nice to meet you.
Are you here all summer?
No, only here for a month, okay?
Okay.